You are listening to Radio Free Signs of the Times, broadcasting into the heart of an occupied America.
In this podcast, we continue our conversation with astrophysicist Jean-Pierre Petit. We're discussing top-secret military projects, and we were in the process of discussing the Aurora project.
You know, as a spy plane, there are some few things that begins to be understood. This machine, perhaps you know this comics called The Golden Surfer. You remember? The Golden Surfer, the character.
The Silver Surfer.
Silver Surfer.
Yeah.
You know, I would call Aurora the Silver Surfer, because when it is in the air, it accelerates, and then it flies as ballistic trajectory, and then gets down in the atmosphere, and it can cruise over 300 miles as a ballistic flight.
So this Aurora plane you're saying, it takes off on its own, and it achieves this velocity on its own.
Mm-hmm.
Because recently in Aviation Weekly, they produced this article, which was about kind of a super secret U.S. government plane, but they were describing it as a large plane, like in the shape of a Concorde, like kind of similar to a Concorde, that carried a smaller plane below it, and it took the smaller plane up to a certain velocity and a certain height, you know, maybe 60,000 feet or 65,000 feet, and then it took off from there. And this was their revelation of this is the technology. But that's not what you're saying. You're saying that there's a plane that does it all on its own. You know, so this article from Aviation Weekly, which is a U.S. publication, seems to be like a kind of a bit of disinformation.
Cover up, yes. It could be cover up, you know. But, you know, there are a wide number of solutions. You can also use that. But what I say is that you can, you know, Aurora must be 20 meters long. Also, mm-hmm. It's a big machine,
yeah.
Because it uses light fuel like hydrogen, you know, so you need big tank. There are some strange features. For example, Aurora was tested near Groom Lake. Americans know where it is, Groom Lake.
Yeah.
It was in the beginning of the 1980, some picture was taken. And when you look to a liner, when it crosses the horizon, it takes 10 minutes.
Uh-huh.
But if it takes some 30 seconds, it goes very fast.
Uh-huh.
If you look over the sea and you have a machine flying in very high atmosphere, and if it crosses the horizon very fast, it's not a liner, it goes much
uh-huh.
faster.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And when they took the picture, they had a dotted line trajectory.
Yes.
Remember this
yeah.
picture?
Yeah.
And I can explain why it was a dotted line. It's not a pulse motor. It's just due to the shape of the exhaust.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you take an airplane propelled by a turbofan, at the beginning of the 50s, the turbofan had a nozzle, and this nozzle was fixed.
Mm-hmm.
So you had an expansion rate, and if you want to have the maximum efficiency at such at a chosen altitude, defined altitude, the better is to exhaust the gas at the same pressure that the outer pressure, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But you take a Thunderjet. Thunderjet was an old turbofan with a fixed
nozzle.
Well, this nozzle was designed for 7,000 meters altitude. So when it was moving on the runway, the gas was expanded too much. And then, remember on the picture, you had the flame and and dark spots.
Mm.
And these dark spots correspond to instability of the jet and shockwaves. And after, you had variable nozzle.
Hmm?
And this variable nozzle now are occurring for all the kind of airplane. But Aurora has not variable nozzle. Aurora has a an ass like a duck ass. I would say a duck ass, exactly. So the gas is ejected just below the duck ass. And well, I don't know, I'm French. I take my word. Perhaps it's funny, I don't know. But you know, when you are on the runway, the gas is too much expanded, mm-hmm. and then you have this instability with this series of shock waves, okay. and especially when the airplane is landing, you have infrasound.
Infrasound, yeah.
Infrasound, very dangerous, so powerful that it can kill people.
Yeah, well, that also has military applications, because they're allegedly, you know, in these kind of new weapons for war on terror or whatever, they say they've been experimenting with a device that can send basically sound to destroy buildings.
Yes. That's a way to produce infrasound, but mm-hmm. here they can be avoided, and that's for the picture taken showed this dotted line, and because the plane had not reached its ordinary altitude, it's designed to fly over 100 miles altitude at least.
100 miles?
Yes. You know, you have low altitude airplanes, like tourist airplanes, and then you have 10,000 meters, which corresponds to ordinary liners, and then you have 300 kilometers that corresponds to satellite. Mm-hmm. And between, 20,000 meters and 300 kilometers, you have this intermediary space. And Americans are the only presence in this space. Russians are not. And that place, which is very important for strategic purpose, mm-hmm. to install beams, to install weapons, and so on. And, after the Black Bear was put in the Seattle Museum, you know, the satellite cannot be only used for spyness. Because when you launch a satellite, it goes straight. You cannot go right, left to see. Let's go there to see what happened and so on. But Aurora can do that. Mm-hmm. Aurora can have a zigzag trajectory, you know. And in fact, it does. I mean, it goes in a parabolic path. When it is in parabolic path, there is no motor and the observation can be done. And then it gets... it enters the atmosphere, and then it turns, and it gets out, a new observation sequence. And what's fascinating is that this machine can be satellized, but for the re-entry, you don't need a shield. For example, take the
like on the shuttle or
shuttle. They have a blunt nose and they have to stand a tremendous temperature. And there is a question that arises: how does Aurora stand the temperature at the nose? Mm-hmm. There is a gadget. This image generator has a special capacity to produce very high voltage, because it works in what we call very high whole number conditions. So it produces very high electric field, and this electric field is used to produce a discharge, a glow discharge, and a cushion. So in front of the machine, you have a cushion of ionized gas that protects the leading edge from heating due to the shockwave.
So the MHD, the part of the MHD that decelerates the air before it goes into the motor, because of the Hall effect, generates this enormous voltage, which is then discharged at the nose of the plane, and it creates sort of a cocoon, as you describe in your book, around the plane, which, you know, sort of like this cocoon.
So it
of
becomes
like
plasma, stiff. It becomes stiff.
Which, and then I think you mentioned in your book that also, you know, since you have this, you know, superheated ionized gas forming this cocoon around the plane, that it also blocks like things like radar and so projectiles,
it absorbs,
directed energy
it
weapons.
It absorbs radio. And then when you have the reentry process,
like Star Trek shields, you know, Shields up.
Yes, you can't call it stuff. But you know, there are so many solutions now to cancel the return of radar waves, and the Russians have developed some very original, and they just surround their ordinary plane with plasma, and plasma absorbs the radar waves. You know.
So my question is, why are they developing these kind of planes and the pulsed weapons, etc.? Because obviously you look at for conventional war,
yes,
the Americans don't need this thing for conventional war. They just send 130,000 troops to Iraq and they invade, and that's it. So it must be for someone else, maybe for Russia, because they can't invade Russia, they can't invade China. But maybe they can. I mean, does this suggest that they're planning for a contingency for a?
But then they know that, like, you know, the Russians had this technology and that, you know, the Chinese have it. So
yeah. So while everybody's afraid of nuclear war and nuclear bombs, that's not what's going to happen. If there's going to be a war,
the problem is much larger, you know. But at first, when I was in Brighton, I asked a question to the guys. What about Roswell?
And their faces just dropped.
No, not at all. No, it was very natural.
They're very happy.
And you know,
they're in the little club, so they can talk openly about
exactly,
it.
Exactly, you know, it's a little club. And as I said, you know, when we're out of state, we could speak much more freely than in our own country. But they confirmed that they recovered the vehicle of a personal vehicle. And if you look at some drawings that were made by witnesses about the machine, it's similar to Aurora. So Aurora is just a copy of the hypersonic shuttle recovered in Roswell.
Mm-hmm. So supposedly, you know, if they recover this kind of ship with this kind of plane with this kind of technology in Roswell in the 50s, then obviously, the research that is being done now, the revelations in public research now, that's like it's what we were saying before. This is not the first time that they have come across this. I mean, surely if they find this craft at Roswell, they take it to Area 51 or a secret military base. They develop the technology there, and they've had it for a long time.
Yes, but you know, they hide the truth. And take for example the disclosure project with Dr. Greer.
Mm-hmm.
You have this famous Dr. Greer, and he says the truth must be known, and so on and so on. So I wrote to Dr. Greer 2 years ago, and I said, you want truth? I can give you a lot of information, and my book wasn't printed yet in France. He never answered.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he doesn't want to tell the truth. He's played by the CIA. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
of course.
You know that?
Yeah,
I'm completely sure.
Absolutely.
So you have a disinformation politics, which is fantastic, you know. Well, it's quite easy because people are so scared. If you say that, you know, extraterrestrial visits don't exist, it makes them quiet, don't exist. So they paid scientists to declare that, and they hide the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And even in France, the militaries don't know the truth. They discover the thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine the man from the Navy, French Navy, about the torpedo? It was the torpedo. And same thing for the, you know, I was a student in an aeronautical school in France, a top-level aeronautical school, which is called...
Super-héros,
exactly. So I was invited by the students and the professor to give a lecture there. So just imagine, the room was full. I had 600 students in the room waiting for me. So I spoke during 2 hours, and after they asked the teacher, well, what he say, is it true? And the professor said, yes, we admit it's true. And the conclusion, we are 30 years late.
Mm-hmm. 30 years late.
Well, you used an example at one point where we were talking about the bombings where they say that they're bombers that take off from Minnesota and then go over the pole
exactly.
and they arrive in Afghanistan. And according to the planes that they say they're using, this is a trip that'll take 15 hours.
Exactly.
And maybe you'd like to talk a bit about that.
Yes, who will believe that? You know, you had subsonic bombers. All the people who are interested in aeronautics know the story about the B-29 and so on, and what all was developed later, like the Northrop wing. Remember mm-hmm. this? And then you had a special supersonic invader bomber whose name was Hustler. You remember Hustler? Hustler was a four-propeller Mach 2 bomber. And after the Hustler, American give up back to subsonic, you know.
Yeah.
Back to subsonic. And now they tell you, you know, we have a fantastic bomber whose name is B-2. It flies close to the velocity of the sound. You know, so the senators asked, because they are very costly, well, what have we done with these bombers? We have bombed Kosovo. Yes. And we have bombed also Afghanistan. Yes. How? Well, these bombers are based in Whiteman in Minnesota. And for this mission, we crossed the North Pole. And then we cross all the Russian territory, but they are nice, you know, they are friends, so we can refuel. You know that for refueling you have to go at low velocity and low altitude, because you are very unstable, and just say to the Russian, you know, be nice, you don't shoot, we are just refueling, okay. But you just pass, and you don't look, nothing.
We won't drop any bombs on Russia.
Yeah, exactly, our bombs are not for Russia, because, you know, if you imagine a B-2 refueling over a country like Russia, you can shoot him down with all these man-handed missile.
Yeah, Sam 7 or something. Yeah.
So you need something like four refueling. And then, if you look at the B-2, you had airplanes, bombers, that were designed for a very long duration flight, like the B-52.
Mm-hmm.
And B-52 can fly during 20 hours, but you had two screws. Two
mm-hmm.
crews,
mm-hmm.
two crews with a room. You have two men.
And a toilet and a shower.
Exactly, toilet, shower, TV, and so on. And so, but you don't have that in the B-2, you know. In the B-2, you have two very straight share, you know. And just imagine two guys who were sat during 14 hours, and then the captain said, listen, we're very close to the target.
Wake up.
How do you feel? Oh, too miserable.
I got a Charlie horse.
Zach.
So this is not what they're doing?
No, this is not what they're doing. Definitely. Definitely. But the real bomber is very close to B-2.
Yeah, but it takes a lot less time.
Because it fly at supersonic velocity without creating any shockwave.
Uh-huh.
And we have two witnesses. One witness is a French journalist, and he gave his name. He's Toinel. Toinel has a wife who is American, and he used to visit Edwards base mm-hmm. often. And he was visiting Edwards base some years ago. And, you know, you have a time shift, so you can sleep so well. So at 3 o'clock in the morning, he went out of his muzzle.
His jet lag.
Exactly. And then he saw the B-2 coming, and the leaning edge were lighted like a tube, like neon tubes
mm-hmm.
by night. It could not correspond to vapor because this region is very dry. So it was electric phenomena. It was a bomber which is landing with the leaning edge completely lighted. It's not lamps, it's like neon tubes, you know. So he saw that. Another guy saw the same thing in Belgium. So we know that there is something strange about this B2. Well, my website is in French. It has not been translated in English. I tried to send that to disclose the project, but they were not interested in, of course, you know. Mm-hmm. And the B2 is more sophisticated than the spy plane, because you have injection of energy at the leading edge, and you modify the local value of the velocity of the sound, and that was practically shown in Brighton, because the guy was showing experiment that I said he has worked on the B2. And we have also something very funny, and you will find it on my website. B2 is built by Northrop Grumman factory, you know. And Northrop Grumman factory 2 years ago published a video clip about the B2 on the website. It was tremendous music, very professional, you know. You see the B2 and so on and so on. And then we analyze this clip frame by frame. You see everything, you know. For example, you have the B2 that flies over the sea, and the sea is very wet. And you know that when an airplane flies close to the velocity of the sound, you have condensation of vapor. So I have many films and images, and you see the airplane, and suddenly, whoop, you have a soft cocoon of vapor all around. It happens very often in England when they have their meeting in Farnborough, because in Farnborough it rains very, very often, so they have an umbrella and they have this kind of phenomenon. So, I think somebody said, well, we should make a clip, but let's track professional people and give them films that were taken during the day, because they will not see the discharge. Of course, during the day you don't see the discharge, only by light. Mm-hmm. And on this film, the B2 is flying over the sea, and suddenly you see the yellow discharge during for 3 frames, but we analyzed that. It is shown in my website, and I knew a guy in the Edward Bates, and he said, you know, they have seen your analysis, are mad at it. You know, they made a mistake, they revealed the thing. And there are other things, you know, when the B2 is pictured by the bottom, you see the image floating because of the electric discharge. So you know, if you're a good specialist, if you're a good eye, if you're a good Sherlock Holmes, you can see what happens. And for example, you know, when the B2 was presented in Europe, you couldn't approach it by the back. There were soldiers that prevent all this. Because when you look at the B2, you have inlet and you have outlet. Mm-hmm. I won't say that they are false inlet, but in the real B2, it's not designed that way. Mm-hmm. For example, take the F-117, the Nighthawk, the stealth airplane. You know how the gas are ejected by the nozzle. Mm-hmm. It has a flat nozzle. The B2, ordinary B2 that they show, has no flat nozzle. It has a very large nozzle, and this nozzle is emitted a tremendous amount of infrared. One of my friend was present when the B2 was presented in France. He took pictures, and with an ordinary camera, you could have 2 big spots, you know. And if you shoot on this spot with a missile with infrared guidance, it goes into matter immediately. That's really it. So, you know, that's the worst machine possible for the signature, for the thermal signature. So how does the B2 eject its gaze? If you look at the picture, how would you call it? Leading edge? By the l'arrière des ailes.
The tail?
Trailing edge, yes. By the trailing edge. It has a tail, a castor. How do you call this animal? you know,
beaver tail.
It has a beaver tail, mm-hmm. So there is no ejection gate there. But all around, you will see the slot. And the slot is very efficient to cool the gas. So we know about how they eject the gas.
So there's no signal, there's no infrared.
Minimized, very, uh-huh. very slow, and because you have fresh air mixed on. So
and what speed then? What's the maximum speed of this kind of a
B2?
I would say B2. Something like Mach 12.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So they build these B2s, and the B2s are not invisible to radar. If I remember correctly, they have kind of a low radar profile, but they're not invisible, and they're subsonic, and yet they cost $2 billion each. Mm-hmm. So basically, what you're saying is that there are actually two B2 bombers. There's the one that you see at air shows and stuff, and then there's the real one. It makes sense if you think about it that you have this bomber that's not hypersonic. And it's not invisible to radar, and so the $2 billion price tag is ridiculous unless, you know, the whole thing is made out of like solid gold or something, which is pretty unlikely.
Of course.
So basically you've got two. The $2 billion incorporates two different types of B2 bomber. One that's conventional, which shouldn't cost $2 billion
you know,
each, and another one that costs a lot more because it's using
the real B2 is very similar to the false one, because the false one is not you put additional things, you know. Mm-hmm. I went to a TV show in France, and I showed the B2, and I said I will show the real one. And I removed what was all around, you know. But, you know, in the general was interviewed about the B2, and the journalist said, but how could your crew stand so long time, sat on a chair? And he answered, you know, one of the pilots found a chair for beach. And he installed that beside his normal chair, so he could take some rest.
He's got a nice, comfy chair beside it. Yeah.
Imagine.
That was their explanation.
Yes. No kidding.
Yeah. They just put comfy chairs in it. That's why. That's how.
You know, it looks like you can't tell anything to Americans. They believe it.
They've got a little DVD in the handrest.
Yeah, but I mean, in America, it's very easy for people to believe that sort of thing, because, for example, in certain states in America, they have, for example, the tollway, like the highways where you have to pay a toll, and they collect just obscene amounts of money. And it was discovered that later on, you know, that they had constructed this giant office building with, you know, all these expensive their desk chairs in the boardroom, if you will. You know, each chair cost like $50,000 and this sort of thing. And of course, you know, there's also the fact that there are corrupt politicians and stuff who steal money. So, you know, when an American hears, oh, it cost $2 billion to make a B-2, you know, they just go, oh, yeah, you know, either it's just really fancy or, you know, somebody's stealing money.
Mm. Yes.
So there's in the news as well that we kind of cover part of on our Science of the Times website on a daily basis when the news comes up. We will report stories about sonic booms, people hearing sonic booms in America, primarily in America and in the UK over the past number of years. Strange sonic booms. Or what they call sonic booms, but loud booms that shake houses, and that almost every time when these stories are reported, the local residents or the newspapers contact the military, and the military say no, we had no aircraft in the area at that time, so it wasn't a sonic boom. But this is very frequent, you know, people hearing strange booms. Now, there could be various explanations for such booms, you know, meteorite exploding in the atmosphere or something like this. But I'm wondering if it could also be to do with, you know, testing of such craft. And obviously the conventional military would say, well, yeah, we didn't have any F-16s in the air that day. And that's true, they didn't. But maybe the normal military don't even know, the Air Force doesn't know about other aircraft that are being flown. That so, I mean, is that a possibility? I mean, would such the kind of aircraft that you're talking about, would they do, they don't do they create sonic booms? I mean,
well, they can't do anything, you know. Will I be considered as a member of the people who believe in conspiracy? But what I can tell you is that Americans have a great advance in military technology, and what they show in Iraq is very primitive.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. But, you know, you cannot use Aurora to bomb Iraq. It's not useful. Why not? Why not? Because, you know, I will tell you something. Imagine the atomic bombs doesn't exist right now.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine in a state discovered the fission. Imagine they test the fission in underground experiment. Will they say, we have a fantastic bomb and we are the master of the world? Absolutely not. They would hide it.
Mm-hmm.
And even if people would say, you know, I heard boom, and very strange seismic sounds, they would say, oh, this is just mines, just mining, this guy is foolish, and so on. And so we live in the era of disinformation.
Mm-hmm.
And for a strategic purpose, the main goal is to hide the force you have.
And I mean, it seems to me that other than hiding this technology, possibly from other countries, like from Russia or from China, obviously they maintain secrecy for that reason, but there's also a probable reason that they hide it, is that if they let the public become aware that they were putting all this money into new technology to try and essentially kill people, then this might not reflect very well on the government. So they need to hide it from the public from a public relations, from an image point of view as well.
You know, yeah, there is something worse than to kill people. It's to control people.
Mm-hmm.
And now people begin to know a little bit about the non-lethal weapons. Huh? Mm-hmm. How to control people, how to burn their skin, how to make them blind, eye distance, and so on. You know, we live in time which is like an old fiction movie, Green, with Charlton Heston, you know, where the rich people.
Soylent Green. Soylent Green.
Where the rich people are protected by system and you cannot approach them. And we are close to this time in which rich people or rich country will be protected for others. And you can't imagine what can be used to reduce the revolts. For an example, you know that you can act on brain with microwaves.
Mm-hmm.
I know that since 40 years. But in 40 years ago, when we were talking about that, it was considered as fiction. Now,
mm-hmm.
now you know that you can do that. Even, you know, I can tell that because you find it on the web in the States. You can use a microwave oven to kill your neighbor.
Senate testimony about that. That's public.
Absolutely, it's public. But you know about the. The chips, very little nanotechnology, RFID, radio frequency identification device.
Mm-hmm.
It's very easy now to make a radio frequency identification device that can memorize information that are really computer, that can use energy of the body, and you can inject that with a needle,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
So if you have a vaccination, you can inject in the blood 100 of these objects in a million persons.
Mm-hmm.
And I will just explain how these very teeny objects can go in your brain.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Jean-Pierre, I think this is an important subject and we'd like to get back to it. I think we're about out of time for this podcast, and we'd like to thank you.
You'll be back with us next week.
Yes, Jean-Pierre will be back with us next week. and we'll continue the discussion.
And if you'd like to read more about the topics we've discussed today, you can visit our website at www.signs-of-the-times.org. And if you'd like to visit Jean-Pierre's site, the URL is www.jp-petit.com. And thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week.